Welcome to a special edition of TFR Let's Talk for SLO Conf. I'm your host, Swapnil Bhartia, and my next guest is Grant Miller, CEO and co-founder at Replicated. Grant, it's great to have you on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me here.
This is the first time we're talking, so I want to know the story, the history of the company itself. So quickly tell me, it's more or less like an elevator pitch. What is Replicated all about?
Yeah, sure. So Replicated started about 6.5 years ago, and we enable SaaS and software companies to package their applications and deliver them into enterprise customer environments. So we work with folks like HashiCorp, UiPath, DataStax, Puppet, and basically allow them to take their Kubernetes-based application and deploy it into their customers on-prem or, you know, air-gapped or VPC environments.
So it's more or less like a delivery company. Is that correct?
Yeah, so Replicated thinks, we think about third-party application delivery and management as the primary use case of the business. So, you know, there's a lot of folks out there that are helping software companies do first-party SDLC, so the first-party software development lifecycle, you know, build, deploy, package, monitor, manage. But Replicated is really focused on the world of third-party applications. So how do you deliver something that, you know, another team in, you know, inside of a big company is going to run on their own infrastructure?
Why? I mean, why did you feel the need to help, you know, delivery of third-party applications that you created the company? What problem you saw in the space you wanted to solve? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so my co-founder Mark and I had started a separate company together about 10 years ago, and that was a SaaS company that was pretty quickly acquired by LivePerson, which is a publicly traded SaaS company. And when we were there, we just recognized that, you know, look, the underlying infrastructure that sort of all applications are built on was going to change based on containerization and eventually Kubernetes. And with that, we sort of recognized that there would be this new model that would emerge. We kind of call it multi-prem software. And instead of having to, you know, host every application and make every enterprise send their data out to thousands of different vendors, with this new model, we knew that they would be able to actually package their application in a much more automated fashion and deliver it to enterprises who can then, you know, bring the applications to where their data already resides. And so that's what kind of kicked off the business. You know, we were very lucky to work with, you know, great developer tools early on. Folks like Travis CI, Circle CI, NPM were kind of our first customers. And we helped them, you know, figure out how to actually kind of scale the enterprise versions of their products, which were all based on, you know, Docker at the time. And then as the technologies have you know, kind of matured, this ecosystem has really become important. And what we now see is that, you know, not just SaaS companies are going on-prem, but traditional on-prem software companies like Tripwire and Puppet are moving their architecture to Kubernetes. Basically, the idea is have a single architecture and be able to deliver it into your customers' most complex environments. And for us, you know, we think that these software vendors are really, you know, they're all reinventing the wheel if they're building this themselves. And so we sort of built a platform that made it easy for any application to be delivered this way.
If you look at cloud native or Kubernetes space, it is very crowded space, we all agree. And then there are a lot of Kubernetes distribution itself now. Do you see that is a lack of a standardization in this Kubernetes or cloud native space, or it does not exist? Because what does that also mean? It adds a lot of challenges for you to deliver applications for your users.
Yeah, there's definitely a variety of ways that folks can leverage Kubernetes. But generally, there's a fairly consistent amount of underlying infrastructure. And so think about Kubernetes as this universal API and with different plugins. So you might have, you know, different networking or different storage, but there's a similar way to plug it into any environment. So applications can sort of expect to have a system that they can interact with and run with available no matter where they're running. And, you know, what we see is, you know, there are these different distros, and sometimes there's maybe some proprietary services alongside of that distro, but most of them are very, you know, focused on being upstream conformant and, you know, being compatible with the overall Kubernetes ecosystem.
Right. And how have you seen the Kubernetes software delivery evolve over the last 6 years?
Yeah, you know, I think when we first started the company, it was really only, you know, these kind of small developer tools, maybe some ops tools that were actually adopting these technologies. And over the last like 5 years, you know, these have become mainstream. And so, you know, lots of large organizations have sort of realized that this is the underlying sort of infrastructure, and it's become a substrate in a way for all enterprise software to actually be delivered. So as it's become these kind of standardized patterns and primitives of reliability, you know, more and more folks have been willing to take that on as the solution for how they actually deliver their products. And, you know, the market has just opened up dramatically. So I think that's the most important change. And the other part is just the ecosystem. The ecosystem around Kubernetes is probably more valuable than Kubernetes itself. You know, all of the networking and storage and databases and vendors and, you know, distro creators, like this is such a healthy and vibrant ecosystem that it pushes everything forward. And, you know, I think it's been, you know, obviously it's a massive sort of platform shift inside of the enterprise. And, you know, right now, I think we're still just at the beginning of what that really means to this market.
You alluded to that earlier, but I just want to go a bit deeper in the context of the evolution that you're talking about is also that, what are some of the common pitfalls or hurdles that you do see that a software vendor still struggle when they try to deliver Kubernetes-based applications to their customers?
Yeah, oftentimes a software vendor will think, okay, hey, we can package this as an operator or package this as a Helm chart, and we'll just publish that and give it to our customers. But ultimately, if you're a large software vendor, you really need to think about the processes and the frameworks that you use to cross-functionally collaborate on the successful delivery of those applications into hundreds of maybe thousands of different enterprise customers. So this can be anything from, you know, making sure that the environments meet your application's requirements. We call these pre-flight checks, or supportability. So, you know, how do you collect support bundles, gather information, analyze it, redact it if needed. You know, there's other things around integrating it with all these different services that an end customer might be using to actually operate your application. So how do you make sure that, you know, any tooling you provide is compatible with their disaster recovery tooling or their internal version control systems or internal registries, you know, that meet their security process planning requirements. So there's just all of these sort of added complexity that's required both as, you know, to enable the IT admin to actually run the application successfully, but then also to cross-functionally collaborate between your support team, your sales engineering team, your release team, and all these different folks that are, you know, within your organization who need to really make sure this application is delivered to all these different customers. You need adoption rates, you need release channels, you need licensing and entitlements. So there's it's really a much more deep problem than I think many people initially think when they're like, oh, I'm going to publish a Helm chart and deliver to customers to run on-prem.
You seem to be somebody who's a strong believer in on-prem software. In the wake of SaaS, public cloud, you know, why do you, first of all, is it true that you are a believer in on-prem software? And two, why, what indicators do you see that they will remain popular?
Yeah, so I think that, you know, modern on-prem software is largely misunderstood. And ultimately, you know, number one, today's on-prem software more likely than not is going to be deployed into a public cloud. It's just the enterprise's public cloud account versus the vendor's public cloud account, right? So it's like, whose account is it? Whose VPC almost? So that's step one. Step two is that, you know, traditional on-prem software required these, you know, bespoke setup and installation and kind of manual operations. And of course, that's going away, right? Like legacy on-prem software is dying. It's just not going to die the way that everyone thinks. It's going to be killed by really amazing, easy to use, modern on-prem software. And we call that multi-prem, right? And so this is where the sort of world of Kubernetes really makes a big difference, because now instead of this bespoke system that you created for every different application, you basically have an operational tax on every, you know, piece of on-prem software you were running 20 years ago. And oftentimes that operational tax was larger than the license cost itself. Now you're taking that cost and you're making it from a variable cost per application to a fixed cost, which is operate the platform and then allow the vendors to describe in a machine-readable manifest how the application should actually be operated in different scenarios, how it should scale up, how it should roll out, and describe that to the underlying, you know, platform. And that platform is Kubernetes. And so with this, you can go from, you know, needing, you know, hundreds of IT admins to operate your internal application infrastructure to, you know, a few different admins or a partner that's going to provide a Kubernetes environment. And then you can automatically operate, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of third-party applications. And then again, you're not sending the data out to all these different vendors and creating this huge amount of data surface area. Instead, you're bringing that data to where the applications already reside. And so we really think that that model, you know, going forward, right, and you can do this in a totally VPN-less way by integrating, you know, sort of these zero trust and kind of beyond corp style methodologies for authenticating users into your environment. So you can still access it from anywhere. You can still put it on the internet. You don't need a VPN. And we see this as sort of the next wave of enterprise software. And this is not just us, right? This is just how the market is already shifting. This is sort of happening with or without replicated. We're just a vendor that's making it easier for all these other vendors to take that step.
Excellent. One more thing that I want to talk to you about is edge. And when I'm saying edge, it could mean IoT. It could also mean edge data center. First of all, is edge within the radar of replicated? If yes, how do you see at edge? Because it poses totally different challenges. It's at a remote location. You cannot manage it. Latency is a big problem. Accessibility is a big problem. Resource constraint is a big problem.
Yeah. So the way that we think about edge is actually, we talk about it as like an enterprise edge network, right? So it's not really as much, you know, the IoT world, but it's more about, you know, for applications that require a centralized service, every enterprise should be able to run their own private instance of that application and keep some amount of the data that they want to in their own environment. And then they can go back to a centralized service to get, you know, the AI updates, to get the, you know, sort of to exchange things in a marketplace. But they should be able to run something locally that keeps most of their data sort of secure and in their own environment.
Grant, thank you so much for not only giving us the story of replicated, but also the challenge that vendors face when they want to deliver their Kubernetes applications to users and how you help them. We don't talk about this problem, but this is a genuine problem there. So thanks for talking about it. And I would love to have you back on the show. So thank you for your time today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.